First, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to speak at this conference. Andre Henriquez, in particular, is one of the main workers on the Bass Loop Group, and I hope that my talk will answer some questions that are of interest to him. In any case, this is joint work with my former student, James Mraczek, who finished last year. And our paper is on the archive at that address. So we will start off talking about hyperfunctions and about localization. Localization is in the sense of Atiyah Bhatt and Berlin Verne. So, reminder of something very old, Archimedes, the surface area of the unit sphere enclosed by two latitudes is proportional only to the difference in heights between the latitudes. How do you prove that? Just omega is the area form on the two sphere, integrated over this band. And z is the height function, theta is the azimuthal angle. You just compute the integral. The symplectic form, the area form in these coordinates is just dz wedge d theta. That's something. The moment map for let me just explain what the height function is. It just projects the two sphere onto the height. And so this band is getting projected onto the interval from between Z1 and Z2. You define a measure, the push forward of the area form. This is just the definition of push forward measure. And how is this push forward measure related to Lebesgue measure? Just by using the definition of the push forward measure. And how do you take the Fourier transform of this push forward measure? This you can do, just write out the integral. And in this case, the Fourier transform does make sense, this type of function. And you can write it as the sum of two functions, e to the I xi over xi plus e to the minus I xi over minus xi. This is a prototype for what we will be doing with the Bass Loop Group. I've written this height function as mu. This is suggestive. It will turn out that mu is the moment map for a circle action on the two sphere. The circle action is just rotation about the vertical axis. And you can contract the area form with the vector field of rotation around the vertical axis. And that tells you that this vector field generates rotations around the vertical axis. So you have a circle action on the two sphere. This one. In general, if you have a group action on a smooth manifold, group action means you have functions for every element of the group. You've functions. You have a diffeomorphism of the manifold for every element of the group. And we'll look at points that are fixed by the action. For each such point, there is an action of the group on the tangent space at that point. Now back to our two-sphere. In general, an oscillatory integral on a smooth manifold X is written as the sum of terms involving local geometry near the fixed points. So Dousterman-Heckmann's theorem writes this out in detail, that the function that you're integrating, the oscillatory integral, is just in this case, in the example of the two, when X is the two-sphere, mu is the height function. And what we're integrating is exponential of I times the function multiplied by a parameter xi. And this is just the area form. N is the dimension of 2n is the real dimension of x. Then this is written out as contributions from each of the fixed points of the action. And the thing in the denominator is the equivariant Euler class of the fixed point. This is just the product of all the weights at that fixed point q. We'll come back to that. So this is in the case of the two-sphere, this is what I wrote down earlier, this contribution from two points, the North Pole and the South Pole. And the equivariant Euler classes were just, there was one copy of plus xi, and that was the North Pole, where the height function was plus one. And there was another contribution from the South Pole, where the equivariant Euler class was minus xi, and the height function was minus one. So that gave rise to those two terms. And I should emphasize that the critical values of the function mu separate the moment map into chambers where the push forward of the Liouville measure has a piecewise polynomial density function relative to the Lebesgue measure. This is Dousterman-Heckmann's result. I should give some dates. This right, maybe 1982. Oops. This follows from localization in equivariant cohomology. Which was due to, there's one paper, Berlin. Then, I think that's 1983. And Atiyah Bhatt also. These were independent. two separate results. Okay, so these follow by applying these papers both let you write down the localization formula for any equivariant cohomology class. And Dijkstra-Heckmann follows by applying to one particular equivariant cohomology class, which is the this is for, I think actually that Dijkstra-Heckmann came after. Somebody check this. This should be localization. For the equivariant. The extension of the symplectic Broglie-Ville volume. Okay, so what we wanted to do is prove a Dijkstra-Heckmann formula for the base loop group. And for that purpose, we need to introduce some technology which is called hyperfunctions. So let me deviate from the order. Okay, so let me define the base loop group first. The base loop group is Suppose you have here I mean compact connected group, and its Lie algebra, and its set of roots. I will be using semi-simple groups. In general, this can be defined without that hypothesis. T is its maximal torus and the Lie algebra of the maximal torus. The base loop group standard notation is omega g. In yesterday's talks, the affine Grassmannian was introduced. That basically is the same object as the base loop group. There are technicalities. I haven't said anything about, here I'm assuming that these are smooth loops. Sometimes you use Sobolev loops. Sometimes people use piecewise continuous. There are other types of hypotheses that are used to define the base loop group. Only some of those match up with the affine Grassmannian. Anyway, here I am restricting to smooth loops. And I'm insisting that the loop sends the identity element in S1 to the identity element in the group. The tangent space at a loop can be identified with loops in the Lie algebra. Atiyah and Presley studied this object and found that it is an infinite dimensional Kähler manifold. This is the Kähler form, the symplectic form. Just take the first derivative of one of the arguments. and integrate around a circle. And it has an action of, this is the maximal torus times this, the unit times U1. The maximal torus just acts by pointwise conjugation. The circle acts by rotation. Basically, you rotate the argument of the loop, and then because you are insisting that the loop send the identity element of the group to the identity element, or the identity element of U1 to the identity element of the group, you have to rotate it back so that this is still satisfied. Plug in theta equals zero and you get one. You have to have that. Atiyah and Presley showed that this action is Hamiltonian, and the moment map for this action, Hamiltonian function which generates the group action. Somewhere we've got. The fixed points of the group action can be written as, they're just group homomorphisms from S1 to the maximal torus, in other words, weights. And the image of the moment map is the convex hull of the image, is the convex hull of the images of the fixed point set. So for SU, this illustration is for G equals SU2. So the weights are, in this case, are just parameterized by integers, and they give rise to these elements, and it's the convex hull of those. So we wanted to write down the Dousterman-Heckmann formula for the T cross S1 action on the base loop group. Problems that arise, it's infinite dimensional. And how do you make sense of the Euler class when there are an infinite number of weights at each fixed point? For this purpose, we had to introduce hyperfunctions. Okay, so I'll go back to that. Okay, so hyperfunctions not defined by us. Definition due to, I think, Kato, Kawai, and others. So if you have an open subset of the real line, choose an open subset of the complex plane, whose intersection with the real line is your original omega. Then a hyperfunction on the real line is defined as a function that is holomorphic on U, the complement of U, the complement of omega in U. So take out this red line. And you're quotienting out, you're taking equivalence classes, you're quotienting out by holomorphic functions on the entire set U. So, let's see. with the aid of hyperfunctions, we hope to be able to say something, classify the critical values of the moment map in this case, and to make sense of the localization formula. So critical values of the moment map, well, a point X is critical for the moment map of T cross S1 if and only if there is a subgroup T prime of T cross S1 so that X is fixed by T prime. And I will write, well, T sub beta, this is just notation for weights. Think of beta as a weight. So we want to know, is the fixed point set of T sub beta non-trivial? And when are two different fixed point sets of different weights the same? Are there any such? And you know, can we characterize these things? So our theorem is that if you have co-character means it's dual to a weight. That's not really important because you introduce an inner product and then the Lie algebra and its dual are identified. Basically, you're using the killing form. So think of this as something in the integer lattice. So lambda would be a weight for t, and m is just an integer. So there's for any such character, this is a Levy subgroup L sub beta, such that T is a subgroup of L sub beta, and gamma is in the fixed point set of omega of the base loop group of T sub beta if and only if gamma of theta comma theta is a one parameter subgroup of the semi-direct product of L sub beta with S1. Then we find that two different co-characters beta and beta prime generate the same rank one subgroups T sub beta prime, and L sub beta prime are the Levy subgroups corresponding to those. If and only if the condition is that lambda over m minus lambda prime over m prime is in the Lie algebra of the center of the Levy subgroup. And then also, every connected component of the fixed point set of T sub beta is a translate of an adjoint orbit in the Lie algebra of the Levy subgroup. So what does this image of the moment map look like? Well, the fixed point sets of one parameter subgroups are going to be these lines. Lines, what this says is that every pair of fixed points of the base fixed points of the T cross S1 action on the base loop group, every such pair determines a unique line, and that is one of the lines that appears. Oops. Sorry. So this cuts up the image of the moment map of the base loop group in two chambers. And on each chamber, the moment map is continuous, and well, it's smooth provided that provided that you're in one of the chambers. The lines tell you where the moment map is not smooth. So what can we say about the Dousterman-Heckmann function? You would like to define something like this. This is the formula that you would get from Dousterman-Heckmann. You can't define this rigorously because the manifold is infinite dimensional. And the equivalent Euler class is an infinite product. Not clear how to define this 1 over equivariant Euler class as a distribution. I should mention one person who did something similar. Wrote down a formula of this type for the base loop group. Based on analogy with Dousterman-Heckmann for orbits of the adjoint or cojoint action on groups. Picken's work was using path integrals. So we are using hyperfunctions instead. I'll say something about the isotropy representation of T cross S1. So the T cross S1 action decomposes the Lie algebra of the base loop group into weight spaces. So here K are just positive integers and alpha are roots for your group. Yeah. I runs from one to n. Again, is the rank of the group. So you can modify the equivariant Euler class by dividing out a factor of k in each element in the product. Then the regularized equivariant Euler class looks like this. You have this is for SU2. You have something that looks like sine 2 pi z1 over z2 divided by N is a choice. Then you can look at the Fourier transform of this. Getting back to hyperfunctions. Here we're thinking of this is really notation. Means that maybe I have to go back to the slide that had omega in as a subset of C. Do that. Oh, whoops. Yeah. So omega was a subset of R, and U was a subset of C. So this notation just means really restriction to the boundary value, or you're choosing. So omega was in your was it was in your omega was in the real in the real line or the maximal torus. It was something real. Then you're complexifying and choosing cones, and this is just notation, meaning that you extend you're thinking of your element of the complex plane as by choosing a cone. And this is notation saying that you choose cones gamma sub I. And if you have three such cones, gamma three as a subset of the intersection of gamma one and gamma two, and you think of F sub I as a holomorphic function on this was your real thing, omega, crossed with your cone gamma sub I, then you set F1 plus F2 to be equivalent to F3 if and only if the restriction of F1 plus F2 to gamma 3 is the same as F3. That condition is imposed on hyperfunctions. It's more or less codes for taking integrals along the real axis and replacing them by contour integrals and then translating them off the real axis. There is a choice involved, which direction do you translate it off the real axis? So that has to do with the choice of these cones. So if we have a Hamiltonian action on a complex vector space with weights lambda sub I, you can define the half space, this half space of the Lie algebra of the maximal torus, where the weight is negative, and the hyperfunction is defined on the Lie algebra of the maximal torus, but thinking of it as by choosing these cones, you're applying this technology to define 1 over lambda of z. So how do you define 1 over the equivariant Euler class when you have infinitely many weights? This is thought of as you have to define your cone as the intersection of half spaces defined by all the weights. And the Dousterman-Heckmann hyperfunction can be thought of as the Fourier transform of this object. So you would want to think of it as deforming the contour off the real axis, which is where the poles are. you need to require that this is what is called a slowly increasing hyperfunction. That is a technical definition. It basically means it does not have any exponentials. So prove that this is slowly increasing, and you can define the Fourier transform of this hyperfunction. Okay. So I will say a little bit more. These are basically choices of subgroups in the Lie algebra of, this is the Lie algebra of the maximal torus, this is the Lie algebra of U1. So these lines represent subgroups of tangent space to subgroup of T cross S1. This slide represents the fixed points of, so the red arrow represents one subgroup, one codimension one subgroup, and its fixed point set corresponds to the spheres that appear here. This is another such subgroup or subalgebra, and you get a different set of fixed points. This is where the moment map sends those fixed points. In the image of the moment map of T cross S1. So here you get three horizontal lines. In this case, you get three diagonal lines. Again, the lines correspond to a choice of, each line corresponds to a choice of two fixed points of T cross S1. The line connecting those. Yeah, I won't say anything about this. For weights of T cross S1, I had subspaces that were denoted V alpha k. Alpha was a root, k was an integer. The weight would correspond to alpha of x1 plus eta x2 plus k x2. So a basis of weight vectors on this subspace is just like this. It's involving k and these are related to the root lambda. Plus or minus is taken depending on whether alpha is a positive or a negative root. And the weight of T cross S1 on VIK is lambda IK. This corresponds to K times X2. A basis of weight vectors there is just, well, it involves cosine of k theta and sine of k theta. this. Yeah, I won't get into details of how you prove this, prove these theorems. This is how you get the Levy subgroup in this case, and we define a map phi sub beta. One parameter subgroups are obtained by conjugating one parameter subgroups of T cross S1 from here to this semi-direct product. Then we write down a formula for the conjugate using the group multiplication of the semi-direct product, and then just check by hand that it has the desired properties. Okay, I'll stop there.
So we should go to the other side for questions first. Are there any over there?
As far as I understand, you gave invitation to the right hand side of the Leustermann-Hackmann formula, but did not give an interpretation of the left hand side of the path integral. Is that right?
Oh. Well, you mean in general or for the base loop group?
For the base loop.
Well, no, we don't have any way of defining the left-hand side because the integrals would be infinite dimensional.
Okay, but I mean for
path. Roger, Roger.
Measures. If you the map space is one-dimensional domains, there may be a way to use the inner matter.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, sorry. So there's the Wiener measure on path spaces. So one maybe could use that to define the left hand side, see if that's related to the right hand side. Question is, did you think about that?
We didn't think about that method. We know that there have been attempts to define a path integral on the base loop group. That is largely Roger Picken. That's this reference. And Picken did not use Wiener measure. He did not use Wiener measure. I'm not aware that anyone has looked at Wiener measure on the base loop. That would be an interesting thing to do.
I don't see any more questions over here at the moment.
Sorry?
It sounds like they don't have
okay,
any.
Okay.
Yeah, let's open it up to questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Variation between the final formula and characters of WCW models.
Could you also repeat the question?
Davide Gaiotto asked, is there any relation to the Feynman-Katz formula for the standard model?
For WCW model.
For WZW model. So let me write this down. Any relation to Katz formula for standard, or you want for standard
model
or W. I'm not aware of a relation to that. Certainly, the Feynman-Katz formula does relate to equivariant cohomology and the Dusterman-Heckmann formula.
Because your expression would depend on two variables, one of which is
yeah.
loop rotation.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it have any modular properties? Or?
Yeah.
Does it have any modular properties?
Could you repeat the question again?
Okay.
Oh, this doesn't move.
Your voice is active.
Okay. Are there any modular properties? Well, there are modular properties of the Dousterman-Heckmann formula. You can write down expressions like formulas like the Hirzebruch signature theorem, things like that can be encoded in the Dousterman-Heckmann formula, but I think always for finite dimensional examples.
I mean, for this specific example,
this
expression, it depends on Z1 and Z2, and I think Z2 looks like the tau parameter of
it. Yes, we are not aware of modular properties, but that would certainly be something interesting to follow up. But we are not aware of such properties.
Are there any other questions? All right, well, let's thank Lisa again then.